Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to Edgewise, where you'll hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matters. Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The AMA is a global leader in professional development and education, improving the immediate performance and long-term growth of individuals and organizations. Check us out on our website, www.amanet.org. In this show, we'll be talking to Dr. Howard Gardner, author of Five Minds for the Future, which is about the cognitive skills that will be essential for success in tomorrow's workplace. But first, we'd like to invite you to provide feedback on this podcast by either emailing us at podcast@amanet.org or calling us at 800-697-3406. Your email or phone message might be heard on a future episode. Howard Gardner is a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He is a recipient of the MacArthur Fellowship, and he is the author of over 20 books translated into 24 languages. In his newest book, Five Minds for the Future, he continues his pioneering work in the theory of multiple intelligence. The book outlines the specific cognitive abilities that will be sought and cultivated by leaders in the years ahead. Howard, I'd like to start by asking you to just explain the title of your new book, Five Minds for the Future.
I talk about five kinds of minds, which I think have been important traditionally, but are really being foregrounded in the world of tomorrow. The first three are ones that have to do with thinking, the disciplined mind, mastery of one or more bodies of knowledge, the synthesizing mind, the capacity to put disparate things together in ways that make sense to us, but also to other people, because we have to communicate the results of our synthesis, the creating mind, the mind that asks the new question and comes up with the new methods, the new products, goes beyond the conventional wisdom. And then two that have more to do with the world of human relations, the respectful mind, which says the world is diverse, we need to get along with people, we need to try to understand them, we can't assume that we know all the answers, and the ethical mind, which asks the question, I'm a worker, I'm a manager, I'm an executive, what are my responsibilities? What are the lines that I could cross but I shouldn't because it's not right? And these five kinds of minds, I think, are going to be essential for any institution, nonprofit or profit. Otherwise, I think that they will be readily eclipsed by organizations which have discipline, synthesizing, creating, respect, and ethics.
So you consider all five of these minds to be essential for success in tomorrow's workplace?
Right. I think that the world of work is totally different than it was 50 years ago. Almost everything is international. Information and money circulates around the globe essentially instantaneously. And the notion you can just have your little shop on Main Street and not know or care what's going on elsewhere is simply naive and probably a quick boat to obscurity. And the other thing, of course, about the world of today and tomorrow is the extent to which technology and science drives everything. And if you can't be one step ahead of the computers or the robots, which is what means being creative, coming up with new things, you're going to be completely replaceable by automata. And when we turn to the area of respect, again, if you only are going to know 150 people in your life, you don't have to care about everybody else in the world. But nowadays, anybody with any degree of responsibility is dealing with people all over the world. Things that you say, even off the cuff, can be instantly spread in the internet. And we need to be much more careful and much more mindful because, in a sense, we're always on trial with the other 6 billion people in the world. We can't cordon ourselves off and say, well, this is just for you, or this isn't to be repeated, and so on. And transparency becomes, I would say, you better be prepared that everything you do and say will be known. The notion that somehow email can be deleted is nonsense. Once those digits are set up, they can never be eliminated.
Now, when you talk about these five minds, you're really talking about having each of them within an organization, not just within an individual. Am I correct?
Absolutely. If we find somebody who's got a five-pronged crown and has all of them, that's great. But I think often, you know, you might have somebody who's quite disciplined but needs other people who are better synthesizer or more creative. And as long as they are willing to recognize those people and give them license to explore, then that's fine. Respect and ethics, however, are not things that you can delegate to somebody else. If you don't behave respectful to others, if you kiss up and kick down, and if you yourself are not ethical, realizing what are your responsibilities as a leader and as a citizen, then you can be sure that that will not be found elsewhere in your institution.
You mentioned that you did consider other minds. What were some of those, and why did you discount them?
I thought about the market mind, because so many things nowadays are in terms of sales and buying and value. I thought about the technological mind, because it's so important nowadays to be able to master the new technologies. I thought about the democratic mind, because that's what we hope will emerge around the world, though I think we've learned you can't impose it on people. But, you know, if I were to keep adding minds, in a sense, the power of the message would be diluted. So I picked the five minds which I thought at once were clearly very important, that I thought I had something to say about them, and that I thought had a kind of logic to them, with discipline being necessary for synthesizing being necessary for creating, and then turning to the human sphere. You have to begin with respect, but at the end you have to end with ethics. So there is a kind of a method to my madness. But if you were to say to me, are those the only five minds, I would say, of course not.
Do you think that people can develop these minds by themselves?
Well, I would say, you know, fool chooses his own lawyer for himself. I think that probably we all ought to be monitoring these things in ourselves. And things like synthesizing, there aren't a lot of schools I can send you to. But my feeling in general in life is we can use all the help that we can get. And certainly nobody walks around and says, I'm unethical. But I'm afraid that when you talk to other people about what you do, or when we use what we call in Boston the Boston Globe test. If tomorrow on the front page of the Boston Globe, above the fold, you know, there's an article written about everything that you did at work in the last 10 years, and your mother's reading it, that's the real ethics test, and not whether you look at yourself in the mirror and squint and say, "Gee, I'm a pretty good fellow or gal."
What is the role of professional training in developing these five minds?
I prefer the metaphor nurturing. Nurturing means you set up a milieu where these models are present, and you encourage people by modeling, by giving them feedback, and so on. I have nothing against a course in any of these, but far more important than a course is a place where every day you see your masters, the people who are your supervisors, and your peers, the people we work with every day, as embodying discipline, synthesizing, creating respect and ethics. If you have a milieu like that, it's pretty clear who fits in and who doesn't, and you have to have consequences. If somebody behaves unethically, they don't get a lot of chances. If somebody behaves disrespectful, they don't get a lot of chances. When it comes to creating and synthesizing, I don't think we expect that of everybody. But if that isn't well represented in the company, I think the company is likely to be outflanked by companies or institutions which have that combination of discipline, synthesizing, and creating.
So there's another responsibility for an executive, which is to coach their teams to develop their five minds as well.
Absolutely. I talk about horizontal support, vertical support, and periodic booster shots.
Right.
Vertical support means the people in authority in the organization exemplify and encourage these traits. Horizontal is your peers. Who are they? Are they creative? Do they synthesize? Are they respectful? Do they behave ethical? One of the very troubling findings from our own studies is so many young people now know exactly what it is to be ethical and want to be ethical someday, but they say we can't afford to do it now because we think our peers are not ethical and they're getting away with stuff, and someday when we get to be rich and famous, then we'll be ethical. That's a slippery slope argument which almost never works. And periodic booster shots are both positive and negative experiences. A positive experience is when something very wonderful happens in the company, in your institution, and you feel good about it and you want to do more of it. Alas, we always learn as well when there's a real disaster, and the question is, does this get repeated or do we make the corrective measures? I studied the New York Times quite carefully over the last 10 years, and while it's great when something good happens, somebody wins a Pulitzer Prize, there's no question that people in the New York Times learned a great deal from the Jason Blair affair where a young reporter basically plagiarized made-up things, and the Judith Miller affair where a reporter was too cozy with her sources and ended up promoting stories which were not accurate. So I think the combination in work and life of horizontal, vertical, and booster shot support are probably the kinds of things that you need to remain ethical, disciplined, et cetera. To the extent that I myself am a manager of people, I hope it's part of my instinct after 20 or 30 years of, you know, nicely prodding people, nicely nurturing people in this direction. And I hope that my friends and my spouse and my kids always keep me honest, will say, you know, you talk a good game, but you better be careful here. Anybody who thinks they know it all in these areas is heading for a very big fall.
Yep, it's time for You've Been Spotted, where we interview a random person who is attending a workshop or seminar at one of our 5 executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Take it away, Kevin.
This is Kevin Lee in the AMA Center, and I'm hanging out in AMA's Train the Trainer program today, asking participants to talk about what skills they see as becoming increasingly important in their workplace.
Definitely the need to understand individuals and you know, in a way, their emotions, but also their expectations between the work-life balance, maybe a little bit more focus on their lives versus their job than there used to be, and always be attentive to that.
Is that something that you're seeing in your workplace, this kind of difficulty to find the right balance?
Yeah, not so much in my workplace, but just, you know, I come from the sales side. This is my first position in management, and I've always been one to probably put more emphasis on my work than I did on my home life. And coming to the realization that not everybody's like that and having some appreciation for that, versus not always looking at the way I do things, look at the way other people do things.
I'm actually just recently been promoted to manager of training, quality, and a special division of consumer returns for my company, which is an eyewear company.
Now, in your workplace, what do you see as a skill that's becoming more and more important?
I would say that skill would have to be an I can do attitude. If they maintain a positive demeanor, I think they'll always represent the company in the best light possible. And with an I can do attitude, which is something that I'm personally trying to promote within the teams and the people that I manage, is so that they can always use positive wording and always try to draw a positive outcome or resolution from anything that they do. And so if I hear wording that's used that may have a negative connotation, I try to train them to turn that around and use positive comments instead. So instead of saying to a customer, I can't do this for you, this is what I can do for you, and start from there.
The skills that have become really important, in, at least in a global company as mine, is communication skills with the global community. So we basically have what we call a virtual creative center, and that requires collaboration across the globe. So it's really important to be able to convey your thoughts, your procedures, your instructions, and your meetings, conduct your meetings in a very global-minded way. I actually had the challenge of teaching in Asia with about 5 different cultures in one classroom. And although Americans might say, okay, everyone's Asian, it's very different to teach someone who's Japanese versus somebody who's Singaporean. So it's really important to make sure that you're able to convey and be sensitive to the culture, be sensitive to the way that they learn, the way that they respond, be sensitive to the fact that they won't necessarily speak up because it's just not in their culture to ask a question or to be very straightforward, so it's important to kind of draw that out.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to Edgewise.